Parshat Matot. We're holding at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, Parshat Matot. We are going to try to quickly go over the Parsha and then go over it a little bit more in depth. The Parsha begins with a commandment to the leaders to pass over to the rest of the people the laws of Nedarim, vows, swears, however you want to translate it, that a person could make a vow and it has halachic binding. He's responsible to live up to what he said. And special laws regarding women's vows, that when a woman is still in her father's house, he could nullify her vows. When a woman's married, her husband can nullify her vows. Then we hit Sheni, second Aliyah. Hashem tells Moshe to take revenge from Midian, from the Midianites. And after that, Moshe is told he's going to pass away. Moshe tells the nation to give forth recruits, 1,000 people from each tribe, and he sends them to war under the leadership of Pinchas. Pinchas is the one that started the fight against Midian, and so he's leading the war against them. They defeat Midian, they kill out all the males of Midian, and the kings of Midian are also killed, the 5 kings of Midian, and Bilam is killed, our old enemy Bilam. They take into captivity the women and the children and the cattle and the booty, and when they bring it back, so Moshe and Elazar go out to greet them. Remember, Moshe is still our leader, and Elazar is now the Kohen Gadol in place of his father. When they see that they've left the women alive, so they get upset. Moshe gets upset. Moshe tells them, "You left them alive. These are the ones that caused us our downfall. What are we bringing them back for?" And Moshe tells them to kill all the males and all the women who had had relationship with men. And only the young girls are going to remain, those we take as our servants of sorts. And then we run into a new series of laws. Moshe has to command them about how to purify themselves and how to purify the vessels they've brought, which is going to lead us into a discussion of how, A, one purifies vessels that are tamei, B, how does one kasher vessels? These are laws that are in this week's parsha. If we have vessels that were used for non-kosher foods, because these vessels were taken from the non-Jews, so they obviously cooked non-kosher food in them, how do we make them kosher? What do we do to those vessels in order to be able to use them in a Jewish household in cooking? And three, the third laws that we have in this week's parasha that are relevant because of these utensils that are brought from the Midianites is the commandment to immerse vessels that are bought from a non-Jew, that are bought, taken from a non-Jew. Hashem then tells Moshe, we're holding by Ravi, to count the booty and to take off a tax. The way the tax is going to work is that the booty is divided in half. Half goes to those that went to war and half goes to the rest of the nation. Those that went to war take 1 out of every 500 and they give it to the Kohen Gadol, to Elazar. And the rest of the nation, from their half of the booty, they take 1/50th and they give to the Levim. And then the parsha enumerates how much it all came out to be, how much each side got, and how much the tax was, how much they each gave as truma. Then we have the soldiers come to Moshe, and they want to donate what different ornaments that they've captured at war, and that's given over to the Ohel Moed, that's given over to Hekdesh. And the parsha ends with the story of Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad, the two tribes of Reuven and Gad, who come to Moshe and they see the beautiful, luscious land that they've captured on the eastern side of the Yarden, and they request to have that as their portion. And Moshe gets upset at them. He tells them, you're going to weaken the hands of those that are going to war. You think you're going to take this as an inheritance and everyone else is going to go fight the wars? Why should you do that? Why should you get this and not go into the land? And B, you're going to weaken the hands of all those that are supposed to go. And we're on the verge of entering the land of Israel. Last time we were on the verge, your forefathers did the same thing. They weakened everyone's hands. And so Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven say, no, it's not what we meant. Or I don't know if that's not what we meant, but they say, what we'll do is we'll lead them to war. We'll go inside, we'll fight the wars. We'll be there till they finish dividing the land, which took another 7 years after they conquered the land. When they finish dividing the land, then we'll come back. But right now we'll build our homes and our fortifications for our wives and children and our cattle. And then the parsha ends with how these two tribes and half the tribe of Manasseh rebuilt those cities that were captured from Sihon and Og on the eastern side of the Jordan and settled them. Now let's go over the parsha more in depth. The parsha is called Matos. Matos literally means staffs. In last week's parsha, there's an important machlokas Rashi Ramban as to when we use the term Matos and Shvatim. Are Matos a reference to the Shvatim in Mitzrayim and Shvatim a reference to the tribes afterwards in the desert and beyond? That's Rashi's Shita, and the Ramban disagrees. Our parsha is called Matos because the parsha begins with Moshe commanding the heads of the Matos, the heads of the tribes. We already mentioned that Mate and Shevet are both staffs or sticks. So Moshe commands the leaders, telling them the laws of Nedar. Now when a person makes a Neder, a vow, he has to abide by his vow. Why is this commandment going to the leaders? So Chazal learn out from this that when a person makes a vow, our Parsha says he has to keep it. But there are times when a person can nullify his own vow, and that's called Heter Nedarim. Heter, like mutar, making permissible, Nedarim, vows. So Chazal say that we have a tradition, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, that if a person makes a vow, he has to keep it, that the Torah says. And if he wants to nullify it, so our tradition says that he could go to a chacham, he goes to a wise person who knows all the laws of vows and how one can nullify them. And that chacham, that talmid chacham, he listens to the person's vow and then he asks him all kinds of questions as to what he meant when he made the vow, and he can find a way to nullify the vow. Often, not always. So Chazal say, the only person who could nullify a vow is someone who's a Talmid Chacham, one of the leaders, someone who knows a lot, a rabbi, someone who knows all the laws of vows. And that's why this parsha is being told over first to the leaders, because they have to know the laws of vows exceptionally well, because they're the ones who could nullify vows. And that's why the parsha began with Rashei Amatot, the leaders of the tribes. No, thank you. So Chazal tell us there's a Mishnah in Chagiga. The Mishnah enumerates different laws. The Mishnah says the laws of Shabbos, they're like Harorim Atluim Besara. They're like mountains hanging by a hair, because you have very few verses in comparison to the laws of Shabbos. We have a halacha by Shabbos that a melacha in Shabbos has to be meleches machsheves, something with intent. If a person meant to pick up a twig and he didn't realize it was attached to the ground, so he did not do iser deoraisa. Why? Because it wasn't meleches machsheves. He wasn't fully intentional with his act. If a person meant to drag a stool, and as he dragged the stool, it plowed a furrow in the ground and made a hole, so he didn't intend for that hole to be there. That's not meleches machsheves. Where in the Torah does it say that melochos on Shabbos have to be meleches machsheves? It doesn't say it clearly. It says when they built the Mishkan that the Mishkan was Maaseh Choshev, Meleches Machsheves. It says the building of the Mishkan was Meleches Machsheves, work that was with intent. And we learn out that the laws of Shabbos have to be like the laws of, like the building of the Mishkan. And from there we learn out this whole series of laws that have relevance to all of Hilchos Shabbos, from this that the Pasuk equates the laws of Shabbos to the laws of the Mishkan. So there are a mountain of laws that are learned out from like a hair, a small connection in the Pesukim. So that's why the Mishnah says they're Harari Matluyim Bisara. They're like mountains hanging by a hair, the laws of Shabbos. Because there are many, many laws that you could hardly find the source in the Pesukim. We have very, I wouldn't say flimsy, because flimsy seems to indicate that they're not worthy to rely on. They are worthy to rely on. That's our tradition. But with regard to how much source material you have in the Pesukim, it's very few in comparison to the great numbers of halachas we have in Shabbos. You want to ask something?
Yeah, but even if you don't have the intention, you know that I don't have the intention to drag that stool, but I know that what is going to happen.
Well, so that's a good question. The Gemara discusses, when do we say it? Is it only with a light stool that won't necessarily do it or not? That the Gemara discusses. It's a very good point. When we get to Shabbos, we have to discuss it. That's a good point. So that same Mishnah continues and says that Heter Nedarim, this halacha that we just discussed, that Talmid Chacham could nullify a vow, that's even less than the laws of Shabbos. That's Parchin Ba'avir. They're floating in the air. It's not even a mountain hanging by a hair. Doesn't seem like it has anything to hang on. If we wouldn't have a tradition that tells us that a Talmid Chacham could nullify a vow, from the reading of the Pesukim, we don't have a single clue that tells us that we could nullify vows. That's something that's totally based on our tradition. We have a tradition going back to Moshe that's the halacha. So that's why that's called Porchin Ba'avir. This halacha that the parsha begins with, that Chazal learned out from the beginning of the parsha, that a Talmid Chacham could nullify a vow, that's Porchin Ba'avir, that's floating in the air. The Torah tells us if a man makes a vow, so in order for a person to make a neder or a shvua, in order for a person's vow to be binding, first of all, he has to be 13 years old. Now, ordinarily, in order for a child to become a man, he has to be 13 years old and a day, and to bring two hairs not on his head, in the places that show he's reached puberty. There's a special halacha by Nedarim that says that once he's reached the age of 13, even if he did not bring two hairs, he can make a vow. An eved, one who's a servant, a slave, cannot make a neder, because he doesn't have ownership over his soul, so to speak. Person makes a vow, he has to keep his vow. Now, obviously this is if he makes a vow that he's permitted to make. Let's say a person makes a vow, I won't put on tefillin. So he doesn't have to keep that vow. But there are vows which a person could make in which he runs into a problem. Let's say he says, I make tefillin like hekdesh to me. There are two types of vows. There's a neder and a shvua. There's a vow that's connected to the person. That's called gavra, a person. Chovas gavra means the obligation of a person. So I can make a vow, I'm going to eat chocolate tomorrow. That's a shvua. Because I made a vow about myself, what I'm going to do. I can make a vow, I'm not going to eat chocolate tomorrow. Again, that's a shvua. Let's say I make a vow, I didn't eat chocolate yesterday. Again, that's a shvua. Let's say I did eat chocolate yesterday. Anytime I say a term of a vow, and I say something that I did or didn't do or will do or won't do, something that's connected to me doing, that's a shvua. But a neder, so we have to think of neder, our basis for a neder has to be a karbon. When I want to bring a karbon, so I can make a neder, I could say, I accept upon myself, I'll bring a korban ola. I'll bring a sacrifice, a shlamim. Let's say I have my wallet, and I'm set at my wallet. I say, I'm not going to touch you again. I could make a shvua and say, I swear I won't touch you. So the shvua is me, I won't do something. Or I can make a neder. I could say, this wallet is to me like a karban. This wallet is to me like Hekdesh. So I have placed the Isur on the wallet. I've said, this is to me as is a carbon. This is to me as is Hekdesh. So I could say that about anything. I could say, I don't like you. Okay, I wouldn't say it to you, but let's say I would say, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And I make a neder, all your objects are to me like Hekdesh. So that's called, I am mudar hana from you. I have made a neder, it's not a shvua, because I have used the term that your objects are forbidden to me like Hekdesh. So I've placed the isur, my statement is focused on your objects. Your objects are forbidden to me like a carbon. And now I cannot have any pleasure from you. And this is a term that shows up a lot in the Gemara. It's called mudar hano. When one person swears that he won't have any benefit from another person, if he says it in these terms, he says your object or having pleasure from you is to me like having pleasure from Hekdesh, like having pleasure from holy things that I'm not allowed to derive pleasure from, then that person is mudar hano. He has made a neder that he won't derive benefit from the other person. So again, what's the difference between neder and shvua? Shvua is when I make a vow that I will or won't do something, did or didn't do something. It's focused on the me. And neder is when it's focused on the object. So that depends. If I walk up to him and I say, you saw him borrow $100 from me. And he says, no, I didn't. And I say, I want you to come to court and testify. And he says, I didn't see anything. So he could say, do you swear that you didn't see anything? If he answers, amen, if he says, yeah, I swear, so then it's the equivalent of his having sworn. Now, what is it? I say, do you swear that you didn't see? So it's a shvua. I'm saying he didn't see.
Yeah, well, let's say I say, I'll help you move tomorrow.
If I just say it, so I just said it, then I have to keep my word, but it's not neder or shvua. Only if we use terms that are similar to neder and shvua, is it a neder or shvua. Now, you could say it in English. If you say, I swear, that's a problem. People don't know that.
But isn't swearing already a sin?
Yeah, you're not supposed to swear. You're not supposed to make a neder either. Only when a person is in time of trouble is he supposed to make a neder. Ordinarily, we say a person shouldn't make a neder. Even if he's going to keep it, he shouldn't make a neder. Yeah, it's a machlokas in the Gemara. Is it better to make a neder and keep it, or is it better not to make it at all? And we seem to say that you should better don't make a neder at all. So that's why people, when they give tzedakah, they should better say, bli neder, I'm going to give it. By tzedakah, so some say it's better to make a neder. We have a mitzvah in this week's parsha that a person has to keep his word when he makes a neder. Now this applies not only to nedarim, that applies to shvuos. We said shvuos and nedarim are very similar, the difference being whether it's object-oriented or person-oriented. This applies to tzedakah. If a person gets an aliyah, and after the aliyah, they give him a shabirach, and then he says, I'll give the shul chai shkol. I'll give 20 shekel, 10 shekel. He just promised to give tzedakah to the shul, either to give the shul or to give tzedakah. He has to give it. That's the equivalent of a neder. And the nedarim are very serious. Chazal tells the whole earth shakes when a person swears falsely. And Chazal tells us that if a person swears or promises to give tzedakah and he doesn't keep his word, then Hashem says, I have collateral. My collateral is what you sleep on. My collateral is your home. What does that mean? My collateral is your wife and your children. Hashem says that a person's wife passes away and his children pass away because of the sin of not keeping his promises. His promise is to give tzedakah or any other vows. So it's a good idea not to take on promises. Scary business. The problem is that when it comes to Hekdesh, we say, when I say I'm going to give something to Hekdesh, it's just like I gave it already. And if I think, I don't need those shoes anymore. I'm giving them to tzedakah, that's it. Let me take them out, I'm going to give them right now. There's someone out there who needs them, I'll go give them to him. The fact that I have gmiras das, that in my mind it's gamul, finished, that I'm going to give something over, that's the equivalent of having said it. So it's always best, even when we think we're going to get tzedakah, to think, if it'll work out, I'm going to get tzedakah. That's something we have to get used to. The second the person thinks, for sure, I'm going to give this to tzedakah or to shul, it's as though he already promised to give it. the finishing thought. No, with Hekdesh we have a special halacha, Hekdesh and Tzedaka, that the Gemir's Das, the fact that I finished the thought, so it has to be that I finished. It could be I'm looking at the shoes and I'm saying, gee, I don't think I'll wear them anymore. Maybe I'll give them to Tzedaka, maybe I'll throw them out. I should probably give them to Tzedaka. Yeah, I think I'll give them to Tzedaka. Okay. So long as I didn't decide I'm giving them to Tzedaka, I'm not in trouble. But once I've decided, I have to give them. And it's more than that. If I decide I'm giving them to Tzedaka X or Y, I have to give it to Tzedaka X or Y. So the best thing is always to think, hopefully if it'll work out, I'll do it. I'm not sure I'm doing it yet. To get ourselves used to not deciding. And to decide when we're going to do it right away. And if we did decide to do it right away.
This is the same as like in the Gemara in Makos when the person wants to buy something and sell, and he's davening and he agrees in his mind from the original price and then he keeps raising the price.
It's not the same thing. I don't think so. Because over there it's not a halacha of tzedakah or nedarim. It's a honesty.
But
he felt.
In his mind, he accepted the first offer.
Okay. So he felt that he should live up to that. But to say it's a neder, if you find someone that says it, I'll be happy to see it. I don't think so. But I don't think so. But I have to look inside. Maybe someone says it. So a person has to keep what he said. And we said it, there's a mitzvah, a say to keep it. And if a person doesn't keep it, then the threat is, Chazal tells, that that's why people's children die as young kids. We have halacha in nedarim, halecha achar lashon bnei adam. We go by the way people speak. Meaning if a person says, neder, I'll be like that rabbi. So what did he mean? So we look at what do people usually mean. First we ask him, what do you mean? If he says, I don't know, then we go by what the average person means when he says that. The Torah tells us that when a person has a daughter, so until she's 12 years old, then we're not interested. She can't make a neder, right? She's still a little girl. Once she's 12 years old, so she can make a neder. She can make a vow. So there's a special halacha that says that when a girl makes a vow, when she's 12, until she's 12 and a half, her father can be mayfair her nedar. What does that mean? We discussed that if a rabbi hears a vow, he could be matir neder. When he's matir neder, what he does is he says the neder is nullified retroactively from the time you made it. Person makes a vow, suddenly sees it's very, very difficult for him to keep it. He runs over to the rabbi, says, I need you to be matir it for me. The rabbi asks him a bunch of questions, and then, however it works, he's matir it. So when the rabbi is matir it, we say retroactively, what the rabbi did was he nullified it. There was never a neder here. The Torah over here gave a different power to the father. The Torah says that if a father hears his 12-year-old daughter say, I promise I'm not going to school today. So he could say, Mufar, I'm made for the nether. You can't keep the nether. You're going to school today. So from the time she's 12 till she's 12 and a half, the second he hears it, he could nullify it. Let's say she says, I'm not going to school all week. I make a vow. She goes to her room, and her father didn't hear her say the vow. The first day she stays in bed, he thinks she's sick. The second day she stays in bed, he thinks she's sick. Tuesday, he walks in, he says, what's going on here? What's wrong? Why aren't you going to school? She says, well, I'll tell you the truth. I made a vow on Sunday that I wouldn't go to school. So he says, no way, no such vow. I'm mayfair. From now on, go to school right now. So when the father is mayfair the neder, it's only from that second on. What happens if she went to school on Monday or Sunday? She sinned. If she would go to a rabbi and the rabbi would be matir it, then retroactively we say there was no neder here. She still sinned, so to speak, because she did something that she thought was wrong. But halachically, the neder is nullified by a rabbi retroactively and by a father from that second on. Now, a father only has that power when his daughter is a na'ara. A na'ara is a girl from the age of 12 to 12 and a half. At the age of 12, when she has two hairs that show puberty, from then 6 months, we say she's a na'ara. Anytime we see in the Torah na'ara, it means that. That's what it means. A girl from the time of 12, when she has those two hairs, till 6 months later. After those 6 months, she becomes a bogeres, a mature adult. She's her own man, so to speak. From then on, her father can't nullify her vows. Now, let's say she gets married. She gets married. They move into a new apartment. She hates the shower. She tells her husband, do me a favor, fix that shower. I hate the shower. She says, I'll get it. She says, I swear I'm not taking a shower till you fix that shower. She says, I don't have to live with a stinky wife. No way. The Torah says he has permission to be mefer the neder, just like the father, with certain exceptions. The husband can nullify the vow from now on. Again, like the father, it's hafara. But the husband is limited. The husband can only be mefer vows that are beino leveino, between him and her. Like she says, I'm not going to shower. He says, well, I'm going to have a stinky wife. She says, I'm not going to put on jewelry. I want you to give me that diamond ring. You don't get that? I'm not putting on jewelry. I swear I'm not putting on another piece of jewelry. He says, mefer, I'm nullifying it now. No such vow. Okay, he's allowed to do that because that's something that's connected to him. Let's say she says, I swear I'm going to wear the shoes that are tight on my feet that pain me. So that doesn't bother him. It has nothing to do with him if she wears shoes that pain her. But we say the second type of neder he's allowed to nullify is a vow that pains her. Any vow that pains her, he's allowed to nullify. So there are two types of vows. One's a neder shel inui nefesh, a vow that gives her discomfort. And the second one is beino leveino, a vow that's between him and her. If she promises that she won't put on eyeshadow, so he could nullify that vow. Now, both the father and the husband are limited in their nullifying powers. The Torah says they have to nullify it the day they hear it. If sunset comes, they can no longer nullify it. So when a husband and a father hear a neder, they have to nullify it before sunset comes, before sunset of that day. So if she makes the vow at night, so he has all night and the next day to nullify it. If she makes a vow 2 minutes before sunset, then he has to rush to nullify. Now, this is contingent upon the day he hears it, not the day she makes the vow. Just like the father could nullify the vow on Tuesday because that's when he heard it, so to the husband. He has all day of the day that he hears the vow to nullify the vow. So a husband and a father can be mefer a neder,